Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Deanne Penn at the United Nations in New York. Coming up in this week's program, empowering women to be part of disaster management policy making, and how all women, abled and disabled, are sisters in the fight for equal rights. But first, the sentencing this week of a former Congolese rebel leader for crimes against humanity committed in the Central African Republic, the CAR, has been hailed by the UN as a sign of progress in global action to end impunity for wartime rape. The conviction of Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court came just days after the first commemoration of the International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict observed on the 19th of June. The UN-backed court found Jean-Pierre Bemba guilty for allowing his forces to rape, murder and pillage during a 2002 armed conflict in the CAR. A panel discussion was held at UN headquarters on the day the judgment was delivered. Leila Zerugi is the special representative of the UN Secretary General for Children and Armed Conflict.
We have come a long way. It is undeniable. And today's sentencing of Jean-Pierre Bemba proves it.
Despite the Bemba judgment and other recent high-profile convictions, the fact remains that there is still a long way to go towards stamping out these crimes. Jadranka Segelja is a Bosnian-Croat lawyer and survivor of the systematic rape and sexual slavery which characterized the Balkan Wars of the 1990s.
I have to say, after speaking for 24 years, after telling my story over and over again, and at the same time seeing that the same crimes are being perpetrated at even higher rate and even higher scope, and after seeing all these women and children who are refugees at Croatian borders right now coming from a different continent, this all tells me that something is still very wrong and that we didn't do enough to prevent that.
Actress Danai Gurira has won fans for her portrayal of zombie-slaying Michonne in the cable television series The Walking Dead. She's written a play called Eclipsed, which tells the story of five Liberian women forced to marry a rebel commander during the country's 2003 civil war. She introduced the room to one of the characters, Helena.
He called me over. He says, sit down. All the years I've been with him, he never had me sit down. Maybe sit on him. But he never sit me down to talk to me like human to human.
I wanted to just encourage everyone to see storytellers like myself as your allies. We are fighting this epidemic, but just from a different angle. But my goal is you walk out with a burden on your heart to know this is an issue you should be aware of. You should make sure that you don't ever look at women and boys who go through this terror as statistics, as things far from you.
Danai Gurira said that at the end of each performance of Eclipse, the actresses say the names of women victims of sexual violence in conflict, such as the Nigerian schoolgirls abducted by the terrorist group Boko Haram in 2014. She said this is one way of ensuring that they are not forgotten. Greater efforts need to be made to empower women to be part of the decision-making process for disaster risk reduction policies, according to a senior Canadian emergency management official. Studies show that women and children are heavily impacted when natural and man-made catastrophes strike. Experts from across the Americas recently gathered at a UN conference in Asunción, Paraguay, to discuss disaster mitigation in the region using the Sendai framework as their focus. Agreed in Japan last year, the framework is a strategy to reduce the number of people who die in disasters and to curtail environmental damage and economic losses. Daniel Dickinson asked Laurie MacDonald, Canada's Assistant Deputy Minister for Emergency Management, why risk reduction is a gender issue.
It's certainly a gender issue because we know from statistics, we know from research and history that women and children have a significant negative impact when disasters strike with respect to both death and injury in those situations.
Why is that?
Women and children are often at home or in a school setting that makes them vulnerable in terms of when disaster strikes. They're often alone and unable to get help on their own. We also know that women and children often live in vulnerable situations, situations of poverty, where we know that conditions, housing conditions, conditions in the communities are not as always structured or supportive of women or people in vulnerable positions. It could be people with disabilities as well, people that are living in conditions that are less secure and safe than we'd see in other settings.
Is there any evidence that women want to be more involved in the making of disaster risk reduction policies?
Absolutely. We're seeing large movements across the world. A good example would be last year in Japan, we saw in developing the Sendai framework, significant movement at the grassroots level with women taking on leadership roles to actually try to be empowered with respect to saving themselves and their children when disaster strikes. We also see grassroots women who are working to advance women's lives in community settings. A group I met with recently called Groups, who work internationally to try to better the lives of women, both in terms of living in the community, but also with respect to being able to respond when disaster strikes.
What more can be done to get women involved in this conversation?
Women need to be empowered, and women need to take action themselves, but we also need to, from both a government perspective, at the local, regional, and national levels, support women in terms of being empowered and giving them the space and the time to hear their voice and the tables to be able to come forward and actually hear what they have to say and support them in their efforts to move forward on planning with respect to disaster risk reduction and emergency management.
Sisterhood is powerful and can be used to bring both able-bodied and disabled women together in the fight for equal rights. That's according to Stephanie Ortoleva, who is president of the U.S.-based advocacy group Women Enabled International. Ms. Ortoleva was at the United Nations recently to participate in a meeting focused on the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. She said that she has always had a difficult time getting women's organizations to consider disabilities issues to be of importance. Laura Jariel asked Ms. Ortoleva how the conference might lead to more inclusion and participation for women with disabilities.
As I have said for many years, women with disabilities are women too. There's really no reason why women with disabilities shouldn't be engaged. In terms of my personal experience, as a child, I had low vision, which degenerated into now I'm blind. I think it's important for me to take my advantages of my legal education to work with, and I do say with rather than for, work with my sisters around the world to advance all of our rights. You know, sisterhood is powerful, and if we all work together for our mutual rights, it will be a better world.
So what would you say are some of the obstacles that you'll need to overcome?
With this panel, we really want to hear from disabled women ourselves, and not have others talking for us, but rather to know what the issues are that are of the most importance and what are the main issues and the strategies that we all think will advance our rights. In some places, it's been very successful where there's been good collaboration. In India, for example, the women's movement and the women with disabilities movement have collaborated quite a bit. In other places, that collaboration has not been as successful. Some of the women's rights organizations see the issues as too separate. We're hoping to figure strategies to overcome all of those barriers.
So what does success look like? How do you know when you're finished with your work?
I mean, ultimate success is peace and safety for everyone and full economic security. Short-term successes, I think, which are probably more realistic to think of, are just bringing a more cohesive women's with disabilities rights movement that works with the women's rights movement, but also that governments and UN mechanisms, agencies turn to for expertise. You know, so often when we talk about people with disabilities, we talk about protection. We don't talk about agency and empowerment and participation in making the decisions to design the programs that are supposed to benefit us. So those are, they're pretty lofty short-term goals, but to see some progress on that which I think we're beginning to see.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can download more of our programs on iTunes. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.